Welcome back to today's episode. We're here to talk about The Sympathizer, a new show on HBO produced by A24. The pilot is about an hour long, and it's called Death Wish. Now, Death Wish reminds me of the super caffeinated coffee, which you can still buy online. I checked. That was the first time I tried that was like 10 years ago. It was the first coffee I ever drank, and it didn't do a thing for me. Like, I remember maybe I was a little jittery, but because I guess I talk fast already, it didn't really do much.
That's the connection you made from this being called Death Wish?
Well, then I found out that it's actually a film that came out in 1975. And I already knew about the one that Bruce Willis was in. It was probably one of his last
2018. Yeah, that's when they remade it.
Was it a remake?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So yeah, the name of the episode is Death Wish. But it really comes into the coffee connection at the end of the episode because it turns into
Does he pull out a Death Wish?
No, it turns into a Michael Bay film because of the amount of explosions. It feels like you're watching the War of the Worlds or the Hotel Rwanda. As this bus is weaving through mortars, everything is exploding. People are dying. The bus tilts over and explodes and people barely run out of it. And then they have to run towards the dock of a plane before it takes off. And that's where this our main character's
friend. Sounds like Greenland.
Our main character's friend. His wife and child dies in front of him and in front of the friend, and they're stuck outside of the plane as everybody's calling them forth because they're trying to escape of Saigon before it's completely overrun. However, the whole point of this story is that it's a retelling because we already know that the main character has been caught and put into a re-education camp. But the other twist is that he's always been a double agent. So even though he was working for the Americans and was trying to get on that plane to live in America, the truth of the matter was that he was also just as happy to stay there, but he didn't want to go into a re-education camp because he had already spied for the communists and for the Viet Cong, those in the North Vietnamese. So he doesn't really, we don't really know why he's been stuck there.
It reminds me of the Americans with the double agent.
It could be a quadruple agent thing here. We have an unreliable narrator and we don't know what he's telling us, whether or not it's completely factual. Because the way this first episode is told, it's not the first time that he's regurgitated this information for the Viet Cong. And so we're led to believe that he's trying to craft it in a way that makes it seem like he's always been sympathetic, hence the sympathizer, to their cause. So he starts off the episode talking about how he's been learning from this cocky American dude named Claude, played by Robert Downey Jr.
Yep, this is one of four roles that he's playing.
Yes, but we only see the one in this one. And then the general, he is the right-hand man too. And this is the part of the show where it reminded me a lot of Spy/Master, the show from last year that I really liked, because that dealt with the right-hand man of a Romanian dictatorship who at the time was also working with the communists, and he tried to solo defect and start spying for the U.S. so that he could escape with them. This guy's doing the complete opposite. He's already working for the U.S. in South Vietnam, and he is actually a secret double agent who wants to then go work with the communists and the Viet Cong afterward.
Right, because this is based on a book, and the book came out in 2015.
Pulitzer Prize winning.
The author was Viet Thanh Nguyen, and he wrote the book directly confronting the history of the American War in Vietnam from the Vietnamese-American point of view. It's not a true story, but it's based on fact. And so,
yeah, a lot of the events happening in the background are certainly realistic. The part that gets me is at the very end, when they're running towards the plane, it feels very Hollywood. And it's kind of strange because A24, you don't usually get that feeling from them. They do independent stuff.
A lot of experimental stuff.
Some stuff a little too far in the grotesque territory, sexual-wise. But there was no sex in this episode. The worst we got was when this girl spits on him. But nothing sexual about it. She was just telling him to punch him. She knew he was one of her agents or like working with him. And so she wanted him to sell the fact that he was actually on her against her by punching her in the face.
Okay, so that was a plane playing it off. Who was watching them?
He's like the police chief, I think. He's the captain, the police captain. And so like he had his target was her. She swallowed something she wasn't supposed to swallow, a tape. And so he has like two guys holding her down, and then she spits on him and then's like, punch me, comrade, or something like that when he's close enough.
I know that Hoa Zwanda, he was the one that plays the captain. It was an 8-month audition process, and he had to fly to Korea and Los Angeles, even though he lives in Australia. And a lot of times he speaks Vietnamese,
Chinese in this episode?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, because his lines, they were in two different languages, which is funny how you take Park Chan-wook, who is Korean, having to write not only English, mm-hmm. but also Vietnamese.
It took me way too long to realize the connection of, like, yeah, bringing in a Korean director who's, like, one of the most famous Korean directors of all time, and what Korea had to deal with when you talk about Japan and you talk about China and the communists and the U.S. and the Cold War, and how, like, those two countries are actually pretty similar, obviously, where we are now with them. Like, South Korea is still a democracy, while Vietnam, what happened, happened. And I think the point of Robert Downey Jr.'s character in this mm-hmm. is kind of to be that cocky American persona where he comes in there expecting, like, every other U.S. battle in the past 30 years for them had always been sort of a victory.
Right. Because it's not just four different roles he's playing. It's four different antagonistic roles.
Yeah.
He even said that he was doing it because he didn't want it to be a gimmick. Mm-hmm. This is just the first time he's ever done it in his career. And obviously Park Chan-wook and even the person who directed the fourth episode directed City of God. Yeah. So it's like they kind of shot this thing with the idea of it kind of being a movie just split into seven parts rather than actually being a television series.
It feels like you're burying the lead with that City of God fact, because that is an amazing movie. And that was probably more of a favorite movie of mine than any of Park Chan-wook.
The stranger thing is that actually the same person who directed City of God directed five episodes of Sugar, which just came out. So he directed
the Colin Farrell show.
Yes, the Colin Farrell show. In fact, the pilot episode, which I know you watched that.
Yes, he also, but we didn't do a podcast of it.
No, I know. But I'm just saying that it seemed like they were able to get people who were really big into film. And even when they were shooting that bomb scene at the very end of
yes.
it, where everything is being blown up, uh-huh. I know that one of the creators, his name is Don McKellar, he was really afraid about it because he wasn't thinking, even when they were writing it, that they were going to be able to do it justice. It took over four nights to do. And even people who weren't on set to shoot that day came in because they wanted to see how they were going to do it.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my pros for the show. It does take you out of it from thinking of this as a slow burn spy thing. But again, Spy Master had nothing like this. Band of Brothers, Hotel Rwanda, War of the Worlds, those are the immediate ones that I related it to. I'll also say that one of my favorite things about this show is that the relationship that's shown at the end where his friend it has his wife and his child die in front of him. That friend has no idea about the captain's true allegiances towards the people who just killed his wife.
How many people know about the captain?
About his true identity?
Yeah, yeah.
He does, I guess. and his friend. His friend, Mon. So he has a friend named Bon. He's a friend named Mon. and his name is the captain.
So it's pronounced Mon.
I think so. And Mon is his, like, connection with the North Vietnamese. And so when everything's going to go to shit, he's the person that he talks to say, you have to go to America. Mon tells the captain that despite him wanting to stay there and not go to the re-education camp, he still needs to go to America because that truly is, he thinks in American or in English and he dreams in English. And he, as much as he doesn't want to be acclimated with that, that is who he is now. Mm-hmm. And so he convinces him of that. And that's why he goes with Bon, who is 100% there for the American cause and watches his friend lose his wife and kid. And it's very sad, but we don't know what happens at the end because it's kind of left at a cliffhanger for both of them since they're waiting to see or if they're going to run towards the plane before it takes off.
So we're left still in the action. We're left with bombs
yeah.
still going off.
Well, yeah, but then we transition all the way back to 1975 where he's writing this essay.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hears a song from one of the cells over. That is an American song. It's one of the ones that he was talking to Claude about. I think it was written by Del Shannon or something like that. And he just starts singing it. And the reason why I think that was left kind of as a cliffhanger as well is because it made it seem almost like maybe he's not in a re-education camp. Maybe he's actually in some sort of weird American torture thing to make sure that he was actually not a double agent, which he was.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that theory is going to go very far.
So they started and they ended
with him in the 1975.
It reminds me
writing an essay.
With that in mind, it kind of reminds me of the Chernobyl beginning scene because we see the main character of that. We see that he survived Chernobyl, but that he also had a lot of PTSD from it.
Yeah, and if I get into my cons of the show, I would say that because we know he's a double agent at the beginning of this thing, it feels like throughout the pilot itself, I know it's supposed to be like maybe he's lying to you the entire time, but it feels like we know where his true allegiance is and that it doesn't like America that much. And so like his deep-seated issues with America, even though he's been there for so long and he's doing a good job at pretending, is very smart. And knowing all the references and stuff, and he's the best at English there. But truly, you don't feel like a mystery is happening because as the person watching it, you kind of understand what's going
should
on.
They have kept in the back should have been more of a mystery and more reveal as the episodes went on.
Well, based on the one like interview that I heard on this, it seems like maybe they are like setting it up for something bigger, but you wouldn't know it from the pilot. And that's why I'm trying to get at is that like it doesn't feel that entertaining when you know that your main character is just going to try to screw over the people the entire time. The other bit of a negative for me is that there's not a lot of tension when you see him avoiding those bombs and the mortars as they're trying to get. Like, you know he survived, right?
Yeah, but doesn't it still look cool? I feel like
whenever
they do
that.
Oh, absolutely.
That scene was great. I'm just picking at these tiny things that are critical worthy. And the last thing, which goes back to my point about knowing his allegiance, is we never really understand why he cares so much about wanting the North Vietnamese to win. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand that America has done a lot of shitty stuff, but it's his life there doesn't seem all that bad. And it doesn't seem like it would be much better under a communist rule. And maybe he's idealizing it too much. But even his friend, the one who works for the communists, this Mon guy, he says straight up, he's like, home is overrated, or like home is not as you remember it.
So it does focus on the captain, because from what I understand, the directors and the creators, actually, they changed this from the book. They wanted to make it have changing perspectives throughout the series. And
in
not
this
just actually
episode, he was the one writing
so
the essay.
He's
so
fully there.
Not only is he there, he's doing narration over his own like explanation of watching it happen.
I have a list of shows here and I want to see if you can see any similarities, because when I type them into Google, they said these shows were more
these just spy based thrillers. Yeah,
kind of. The first one is The Regime.
The Regime came out this year. They both came out this year. One is about a fictitious government that I think takes over England, or was it? No, it was its own country, right?
It
was about this lady who, it was an English-speaking country, and it was about a lady who kind of gets obsessively compulsive. And it was like making fun of Russia, I think, because her dad was still alive. I don't see the two as connected. No.
What about Manhunt?
Manhunt, U.S. in the 1800s versus this Vietnam in the 1970s.
Maybe it's because they're both kind of historical.
Yes.
But then what
if you're a historical junkie.
What about something like Shogun?
Shogun's interesting because a lot of this has to do with culture. And how Robert Downey Jr. acts in Vietnam is kind of just this really pretentious American CIA dude who thinks he can do whatever he wants, and in fact does kind of screw over them because he gives them such a small plane to get out of there at the last minute. He does give them a plane, but every other way I can see why he would be considered an antagonist of the series. In similar route, you kind of have Shogun, and our main character is kind of like a cultural in-between because he speaks English and he also speaks Vietnamese, and he kind of understands both cultures, and he's kind of disgusted by one of them, and he grows more disgusted over time with that one. Shogun kind of similar in that respect. I do see a connection there. Yeah.
Okay,
that works.
More so than the other ones.
Well, also, yeah.
What about the pros and cons? We went through them. What would you give the actual
show? So Bond, Man, and the Captain are all friends. So Bond, the guy whose wife and kid die, they've known each other since they were 14. They cut their hands together.
I read about that.
Yeah. And Man ends up being this communist worker, and the Captain is working with him, but Bond knows nothing about it, yet they still remain friends, and they're splitting beers together.
Well, what's so funny about that is Bond and Mon, they both are actual friends in real life.
For the pros, I really like that because it seemed like something you don't normally you wouldn't have thought of it as a storyteller right away. And it's definitely not something you see in most shows. And yeah, we don't get a lot of Vietnamese-based shows. But having one become a dentist and also working for the communists, one become a cop and become so close to the Americans, and then one become a pilot, but like be 100% in the American camp, and yet somehow retain their like bond together, was really cool to see. And I think they should have focused more on it. I also like the last scene of the show. And then there was one scene that I have to point out where this is billed as a comedy, even though the first episode really doesn't feel like a comedy. So there's this scene where the captain gets this huge responsibility. He gets to choose who gets to leave Saigon before it's overrun, right? And so he has 92 people that he gets to choose seats for. And he has given the list of like all the generals and stuff that they want to go, but they have to weed a bunch off. And if he weeded off all the indispensable ones or the best ones, it would be clear that he would be a double agent. But if he doesn't give the communists anybody good, then he's not doing his job.
Right, yeah.
And so he has to like run this delicate line in between and fix the one and pick the ones that seem like they're doing a good job and bring them over, even though if they're incompetent. And so they show him going through the interview process and kind of pissing people off, telling them that they're not going to be able to bring their families. And one guy gets in there, and this is very Shogun-ish, because he's like, I'd rather kill myself right here, right now, than step on that plane without my family. And so instead of doing anything, the captain, to stop him, he pulls out his gun from his desk and puts it on the table, and he says, make it quick, I've got other things to do, and he walks out.
Like, wait, and the guy, the captain did that?
Yes, the main character did that. And so then the guy stares at the gun and he like makes a move towards it, but then he thinks better and he takes the candy that's right next to it and empties out the candy jar and goes on his way. So that was a pretty funny joke. And there were also like some funny one-liners by Robert Downey Jr. It did feel like in this first episode was probably his easiest gig because he was just kind of playing a cocky bastard.
Yeah, I know that the next episodes, that's really when you get a good sense of him. I think he's almost kind of like a secondary main character.
Yeah, because if it was only this, I would almost put it into a because it feels like he's just doing too little, like he's just kind of playing a persona because he's famous, you know, that type of thing. But because he's going to be taking on more roles, I'll give him a break on that point of view. By the end, most of the people make it off onto the plane. However, we do get sort of a World War Z-ish thing where people are trying to run over the or climb up the fences to get out of there, get to the planes. The fall of Saigon, April 30th, 1975, if I think I've got the date correctly, is a really, really famous date in history for this reason. And it's an embarrassment for the Americans for sure. And so this show coming out near 50th anniversary is kind of interesting.
And I know that Nick Fickman, a producer for the series, read the book in 2021. He introduced the book to another friend of his who is a producer, Kim Lee. And then by that, they decided that they were able to get all these different people like Park Chan-wook and other directors. The weird thing is that the final three episodes, which are considered to be, and I know you didn't watch them, but they're considered to be kind of when the series falls off, is when they were put in the hands of the director Mark Mundin. But the strange thing about him is that he's done a lot of TV series like Black Sails, National Treasure, The Third Day.
And, but none of those are like the other ones that you were talking about.
But that's the weird thing, right? Because the first four episodes were directed by people who are very much known for film and did this thing like a movie. And the last three episodes,
they could have just paid them more to do more.
Yeah, they could have. Or the last three episodes, though, is made by someone who does a lot of TV. So that might be where the disconnect comes in. That being said, it's gotten good reviews. It has an 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, 81% audience score, 7.5 on IMDb. A lot of people praising Robert Downey Jr. for his performance. And Slate even said that it was a stylish adaptation, but that a little bit of these caricatures goes a long way, and the series kind of gets bogged down in the middle.
Yeah, and I'd even say its starting point isn't as interesting as Spy/Master. This episode, I really went between a 6.5 and a 7, and I will settle on a 7 because I know where it's going, but that did take a little bit of extra research to find out that, like, what I was watching the character do wasn't necessarily his true motives, and that he was doing it because he was under duress of having to write this this thing. But you wouldn't know that if you just tuned in onto this show. And that's where I would feel it would be more of a 6.5.
Since you do know it, are you going to watch the rest of the series?
Nope, because even then it feels more like a 7. There is a lot to say, though, about re-education camps and how like dangerous and scary those things are. Because, I mean, you still have them in China. You still have the Uyghurs who are part of that. In Beyond Utopia, it was all about escaping North Korea and like how dangerous that is. And I couldn't help but like be connected to that when they were talking about that. I wonder if they're going to go into how, because it is saying it from the point of view of someone who doesn't like the American side, but whether they're going to go into how horrible it was just basically for all of Vietnam at that time. It didn't really feel like freedom. I can imagine when the U.S. left, but at the same time, it probably did feel like a relief to a lot of people. So yeah, I do think that there's a reason for like history buffs to be excited for a show like this. I don't think it's going to meet the same expectation of the book. 7 will be my final rating on it. I won't be watching it myself.
Okay. Sounds good.
Anything else?
No, that's about it.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next episode. Hope you enjoyed this one. Bye.
Bye.